Good morning, people of this planet Earth. It is I, that voice in your head again. The siren call that you cannot resist. Yes, the Stream of Random podcast is back in its worst form, the solo cast. So do not attempt to run to the door. Do not attempt to hit stop. No, you're trapped in this episode with me for the next hour, where you're going to be bored to death. I'm so sorry. The torture cast is about to start. You do not have the willpower to resist. Yeah. It's 5:30 in the morning. We have a late start. We, the royal we, meaning me and you. And there's even other people out this morning already. These dogs have flashlights on their collars. That's pretty amazing. Good morning. Nice lights. Dogs got flashlights on their collars. What people never think of. That's good coffee. Good coffee. So we have Venus rising in the east. It's already so late. She's already over the tree line. Mars is up high. The sky is clear. The day is beautiful. Yesterday we had an amazing family day, Thanksgiving. The food was so delicious. Company was good. We sat outside. And even the chickens had Thanksgiving. We've had a compost bin brewing for them for 1 year, where we threw away their first litter when they were babies, and all the boxes and everything, just threw them in there, leaves on top. And over the whole year, it's been compacting down. And yesterday we tipped it over, spilled it out for them, and it was a smorgasbord of bugs and worms and everything. And they were picking through that for hours, and they had their own little Thanksgiving fest. It was great. And also the chickens, we've been using the pitchfork to turn over the ground to dig up a couple of inches and dig up worms for them. And they love that. And it's funny because the chickens actually now come up and peck at the, they'll chase after me and peck at the pitchfork now, like asking for more. It's like they're associating the pitchfork with the worms. It's almost like they understand. So we're building a great relationship, me and my chickens. Communicating on a really basic level of food and exploring new territory together. So today, we're going to talk about the master and his emissary. So, we have talked about my theory of meaning with the left and right brain split, and the symbols being created between. And it turns out that there was a 10-year-old book on this very topic. They mentioned it yesterday on the No Agenda show. It hit me like a ton of bricks. Obviously, I'm not well read enough on this topic, so And there's no new book networks books on this because it's actually an older book. So I listened to the RSA talk where they diagram the thing out, and I can give you kind of the lowdown from that. So put simply, he drew this triangle out. And the tip of the triangle is the left brain, meaning the point. The left brain is on point. It's focused on the details of here and now. And it's also empty in terms of context and meaning. And the right brain is the open side of the triangle extending to infinity, which is the detached self. Jocko would say you have to detach from the situation and see things from all around. And that's the right brain, according to this guy's theory. It's the master who is not concerned with everyday life. And it's quite the interesting theory, and I love it. And I want to dedicate some episodes to covering different aspects of this. I thought I would first just give you my freeform thoughts, and then we can listen to some supporting clips and comment on them. So, if you haven't hit stop by now, you're never going to be able to, because this is going to suck you in. All right. Oh, and some other commentary. Trump held a press conference, and the reporters are like, oh, so you're going to leave? Are you going to leave when it's November 20th? He's like, sure, I'll leave, no problem. But that's a long time until then, basically, he said. And he's got a lot of evidence to show. So, looks like Trump is staging his reality TV show now. And it's going to get quite interesting. Quite interesting. These guys got an animated Santa Claus in their window. That's pretty cool. So, looks like life is happening with our co-host as well. We're going to excuse him for today, because life happens. And we're going to forge on. Oh, and another update for my personal. So I created a organization. I created an organization on GitHub. I think it's called Embedded RDFA. And I put together examples of how we can embed RDF in HTML as a how we can embed the RSS or the metadata tags inside of HTML as quoted or escaped. Yeah, it's escaped RDFA. So by escaping the content and putting it inside of a special block, that's also escaped. we can target it. And I also provide provisions for unescaping it or ignoring the escapes, using the example tag. And I wrote up a whole blog post on that. I'll put a link into the show notes. I'm sure you non-technical people are like, what the hell is he talking about? Well, the short story, the gist of it is, we want to provide a way to save money on hosting podcasts on normal blogs. but still be able to provide metadata information. And you can't do that on WordPress and Blogger inside of the existing systems using the free versions of them. Because they limit what you can actually put in your blog. So I'm talking about escaping quoting the metadata as HTML, but a certain type of quoted HTML. It's like it's quoted, it's a quote, it's escaped, so it's not really valid HTML in terms of it's just text, but if you unescape it, you will find what you're looking for. So it's going to be interesting. And I guess I have to create some modifications to existing parsers to accept that. And it'll be good for other forms of linked data. And I also think we can embed, we can escape the contents of HTML tags inside of the podcast transcript. So we can say like iTunes explicit true, or like begin tags, tag iTunes explicit is true, end tags. So that would be like something we can just say in our podcast, and that would set the explicit flag for this episode. And just by adding it to the episode in terms of audio, and then adding it to the transcript, we would then interpret the transcript as instructions. So, but then the question is, are we talking about it? So if we wrap it in example, so we could say like escaped RDFA example, you know, iTunes explicit, then that wouldn't be, that would be an ignore section for the command processor. It's like ignore this, right? And if we say escaped RDF a embedded, that would mean turn it live. So make a live example or live command. So we're basically adding in a new wrapper command around the quoted content so that the processor knows that we're not just talking about it, we actually want to do it. I suppose we could also add an attribute like ignore equals true, or this is really an example true, into the embedded to allow to use that as an example. And then you just strip out the ignore flag to turn it live. So we're going to have to be able to specify this without example. Or we wrap the example in an ignore flag. I mean, we're going to have different ways of doing this. So basically, you don't want the processor to pick everything up. Anyway, I'm sure I've confused the hell out of you. And I have a write-up on this. So, well, I don't have a write-up on the podcast, on the processing of the I don't have a write-up yet on the processing of the content, the transcript yet, but we will get there. And the processing of the transcript is equivalent to the voice command processor, really. So we're going to have real-time in-band and out-band of voice processing. Like, process the voice while listening to the podcast, or process the voice while recording the podcast, or process the voice after recording the podcast. Well, that's listening. So you have two options. Let's say before publishing and after publishing, for the listener and for the producer. Okay. Boy, I bet some of you are just hitting their stop button or hitting next. And I'll give you some warning. I'll have to give you some fair warning. Yeah. But this guy is basically saying that words are created as symbols between the right and the left brain. So that's interesting. And he's also saying that the right brain, the master, cannot be attached to daily things. Otherwise, it'll lose its superpower of being detached. As soon as it attaches. Now, this is what Buddha said. He said, if you are attached, you will be involved in the daily cycle of karma. And you have to remain detached. And Lao Tzu, the old master of Tao, also said some very similar things. Saying that the master is everywhere and nowhere at once. I mean, we can reinterpret Lao Tzu or Lao Tzu as talking about this. So I like that so far. Well, why don't we pull up some clips now and move into the second part of the show, which is going to be the clip segment. Now, we actually have an interview with this guy, the author. And they ask him some questions. And the first question is like, well, why did you call it the master and the emissary? And he was basically saying that people always think of the left brain, the detailed brain, as the master. But it's not. Well, let's play some clips from him and I will comment on those. So we're going to get into the second part of the show. Thanks for not hitting stop at this point. I hope you enjoy my little comedy sketches sometimes, and have a great day. Well, you're going to hear more from me, but this is the end of the first part.
Well, I have a question. I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about why you specifically chose the title, The Master and the Emissary.
In an attempt to explain what I believe to be the relationship between the two brain hemispheres, that like most other things in life, they're unequal and asymmetrical, and that one of the brain hemispheres sees more than the other. That is the one that I've designated the master, and is the right hemisphere.
That's a weird inversion, because people often think of the left hemisphere as the one that's like dominant.
They do. Traditionally, that's been the case. But as is becoming ever clearer, the right hemisphere, this has been a real steep learning curve for some people. But the right hemisphere is in many ways more reliable, sees more, understands more than the left hemisphere, which is like a sort of high-functioning bureaucrat in a way. And the idea of the story was simply that certain matters needed to be delegated, not only because, as it were, the master couldn't do everything. He needed an emissary to go abroad and do some of it, but also that he must not get involved with a certain point of view, otherwise he'd lose what it was that he did see. So that's what I'm really saying there, is that there's a good reason why evolutionarily speaking, the two brain hemispheres are separate.
And when you say, does... Well, I have a question. I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about why you specifically chose the title, The Master and the Emissary. And
that's in an attempt to explain what I believe to be the relationship between the two brain hemispheres. That, like most other things in life, they're unequal and asymmetrical. And that one of the brain hemispheres sees more than the other. That is the one that I've designated the master, and is the right hemisphere.
That's a weird inversion, because people often think of the left hemisphere as the one that's like dominant.
They do. Traditionally, that's been the case. But as is becoming ever clearer, the right hemisphere, this has been a real steep learning curve for some people, but the right hemisphere is in many ways more reliable, sees more, understands more than the left hemisphere, which is like a sort of high-functioning bureaucrat in a way. And the idea of the story was simply that certain matters needed to be delegated, not only because, as it were, the master couldn't do everything, he needed an emissary to go abroad and do some of it, but also that he must not get involved with a certain point of view, otherwise he'd lose what it was that he did see. So that's what I'm really saying there, is that there's a good reason why, evolutionarily speaking, the two brain hemispheres are separate.
And when you say, does...
Yeah. So I'm just remembering this old book that I read on the theory of subconscious power and belief. I think it was on magic in terms of making things happen, like the secret type stuff. Anyway, occultism. And they basically showed this symbol, and they were saying that by doing casting a spell or doing a ritual or doing something to achieve some effect, that you would immerse yourself in the details of the operation, and then you would let yourself go, and these symbols would spiral down into a zero point and go into the subconscious, and then come out on the other side in the world as a action or reaction to that. And I was just thinking that that kind of speaks to the right-left brain split, so that the left brain would do some ritual or some action and then let go. And this action would then travel through, or this ritual would travel through the right-left brain split and then show up on the right brain, which is involved in everything. And it would be the letting go or the releasing from the detail-oriented left brain. And then the disattached right brain would kick in. And pick up on what's happening or what was wished for, and act as an agent, basically, of the universe. Well, I guess this is also the question of, does it take sides? Does it get involved? So I guess praying and all types of occultism and magic and all that stuff and the secret, all of that is just asking for your right brain, the master brain, to get involved and to attach itself to something. And Buddha said that that is the root of all karma and all evil, is the attachment, getting involved and causing the endless cycle of karma again. So maybe even the right brain is detached in terms of a quantum state. It's in a non-entangled state or a differently entangled state, existing on in a safer space, let's say, than the daily grind. I know I'm talking spooky stuff or mysticism stuff, and I know that people who are people who have knowledge of the situation, who don't want to be named, will be mocking me and saying, "You have no proof! You're talking bullshit!" So, anyway, I'm just going to throw this clip in here because, you know, it's my show and I can do that, so. Oh, I just wanted to throw in that I heard an actual owl going ooh-hoo, ooh-hoo when I first started up this morning. And I have to take a picture of this house here for you guys. Boy, things are just flooding into my head listening to this. You know, I have been working on this introspective project for such a long time. And, you know, it takes the view of the compiler writer and tries to understand the data that the compiler writer has about the program. And the compiler writer has the master disinterested view. It's not interested in your particular application. It's not interested in your particular problem. You know, you're interested in your particular problem. The compiler writer or the programming language creator is not. They're solving a different problem. They're solving the problem of creating a generic tool that's usable, right, to solve many people's problems. So the compiler writer is the disinterested party. You know, the compiler is the disinterested party. And, the introspector idea is that we can gain knowledge from the disinterested party and give it to the interested party. So take some data from the right brain and give it to the left brain so that it can work more effectively. I mean, that's a question if that's even possible. But it definitely puts this whole thing into perspective that I've been doing for many years. And I remember when I worked at Intel, I met one of the compiler experts. And they brought him in personally to work on this project. And he would sit down and he would draw out the operations and the diagram out the assembly code instructions and try and understand them. It was quite amazing to watch him work. And that was like, he was the disinterested party actually becoming interested in optimizing the compiler for this particular application, because Intel owned the chips and the compiler. Wow, I wonder if I could even get in trouble talking about this. Damn. Am I gonna have to censor this clip? Well, it's no secret that they own all of that and they can call on their people to help out on projects. So, and for the open source world, you are the compiler writer. At least you could be, if it wasn't goddamn hard. All right. Let's continue listening. I mean, I'm stopping on the first 10 minutes and just inserting all this stuff. But that's just the way it is, kids. Sorry.
The two brain hemispheres are separate.
And when you say it doesn't get involved, what's the advantage of that detachment from the involvement?
Well, it's that Ramon y Cajal, who you know is a great histopathologist, one of his findings was that in primates there are more inhibitory neurons than in any other animals, and there are more in humans than in any other primate. And there are many more...
And that's speaking proportionally.
Proportionately, mm-hmm. And there are more kinds as well. So we think that about 25% of the entire cortex is inhibitory.
Right.
So it's a very strong effect. And the corpus callosum seems to be very largely, in the end, inhibiting function in the other hemisphere. And that is, I think, because over time, the two hemispheres have had to specialize. There are reasons why actually it can't be, I'm not going to go into now, but I was talking about just a few days ago at the evolutionary psychiatry meeting. But there are reasons why the corpus callosum has had to become more selective and to inhibit quite a lot of what's going on in the other hemisphere, because it enables the two to do distinct things.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they have to work together, but usually good teamwork doesn't mean everyone trying to do the same role.
Right.
So differentiation is very important for two elements to work together. And inhibition is one way of doing that. So, effectively, the two takes on the world, if you like, that the hemispheres have, are not easily compatible.
Right.
And we're not aware of that because, at a level below consciousness, there's a meta-control center that is bringing them together. So in ordinary experience, we don't feel we're in two different worlds, but effectively we are. Mm-hmm. And they have different qualities and different goals, different values, different takes on what is important in the world.
So here he says that inhibition and different forms of inhibition make up 20% of the brain, and that the higher species have more inhibition than the lower species. So this is an interesting thought. Now, when you meet people and they're like, well, that's my job, and they try and inhibit other people from getting involved, I guess that could be a natural consequence of the distribution of work across a society and people playing different roles and inhibiting each other. And maybe my lack of inhibition is just a sign of my underdevelopment of that, or not understanding that. Bam, boom. And when people encounter me and they see that I'm not inhibited, they try and inhibit me. They're like, oh God, we have to put this thing under containment. He's just a wild child. Well, they say the fool who persists in his folly will become wise. So, anyway, that's something to think about. So they're talking about inhibition and how different parts of the brain function. And I'm also saying that on the macro scale, people assume also different roles. I guess we get our first dialectic or dichotomy here between the emissary and the master here. The eternal fight between the right and the left brain, between involvement and detachment. I think we could define a stake in the ground and a boundary right there between inhibition and permission, shared responsibility and standoffishness. Yep. Well, on the introspector idea, you know, basically we want to increase the bandwidth between the two hemispheres and say, oh, well, why don't you give me a dump or a snapshot of what you've got over there, Mr. Right Brain? Give me some clues. And let me develop tools to understand that better in the context of my personal perspective for my project. Okay, well, let's think compiler plugins.
And what meaning or whatever it might have.
So let me ask you about, I've developed a conceptual scheme for thinking about the relationship between the two hemispheres, and I've been curious about what you think about it and how it might map on to or not your ideas. So I've been really interested in the orienting reflex, and
right.
discovered by Sokolov, I think, back in about 1962, right? He was a student of Lurius. And the orienting reflex is manifested when something, at least in their terminology, something unpredictable happened. I've thought much more recently that it's actually when something undesired happens, and right. the laboratory constraints obscured that, and that turned out to actually be important. But
right.
So I kind of put together the ideas of the orienting reflex with some of the things I learned from Jung's observations on the function of art and dreams.
Right.
So imagine that you have a conceptual scheme laid out,
right.
and we could say that it's linguistically mediated, it's enforced on the world, and then there are exceptions to that conceptual scheme, and
yeah.
those are anomalies, those
yeah,
are the
anomalies.
Things that are unexpected, and the orienting reflex orients you towards those.
Yes.
And so those are things that aren't fitting properly in your conceptual scheme that you have to figure out.
Yes.
So the first thing you do is react defensively, essentially,
yes.
because
yes.
it might be dangerous.
Yes.
And then your exploratory systems are activated.
Yes.
So, and the exploratory systems, first of all, are enhanced attention, just
yes.
from an intentional
yes.
perspective. But then, and this is where the art issue sort of creeps into it, it's the idea would be something like the right hemisphere generates an imaginative landscape of possibility that could map that anomaly. So you can kind of experience that if
yeah.
it's at night, you know, like say
yeah.
you're sitting alone at night, it's two or three in the morning, you're kind of tired, maybe you're in an unfamiliar place, and there's a noise that happens that shouldn't happen in another room.
Yeah.
You can play with that. So for example, if you open the door slightly and put your hand in to turn on the light and you watch what happens, your mind will fill with imaginative representations of
yes.
what might be
yes.
in the room.
Yes.
Right? So it's like the landscape of anomaly will be populated with
yes.
something like imaginative demons.
Yes.
And that's a first pass approximation.
Yes. Yes.
And it seems to me that that's a right hemispheric function. And then that as you explore further, that imaginative domain, which circumscribes what might be, is
yeah.
constrained and constrained and constrained and constrained until you get what it actually is.
Yes.
And that's specialized and routinized. It's something
yes.
like that.
Yes. Yes.
Does that seem like a reasonable... What do you think about that?
So... That's an interesting take that Peterson has. And he's talking about the generation of possibilities and the interaction between the left and the right brain. that's quite the description right there. Another thing, he's talking about orienting reflex, to orient. So, the OODO, or OODA loop, is observe, orient, decide, and act. And the orient is what turns your attention and your focus, the tip of the spear, the tip of the triangle. It's turning that towards an anomaly or a point that is, you know, worthy of your attention. And that is quite interesting. The the orientation as meaning to face the enemy. And so you observe, you detect an anomaly, you orient towards that anomaly, you make a decision, you take an action. O-O-D-A.
Like that. Yes, yes. Does that seem like a reasonable... What do you think about that?
I love that for a whole host of reasons. One is you mentioned defense, and one of the ideas behind my hypothesis is that the right hemisphere is on the lookout for predators,
right.
whereas the left hemisphere is looking for prey. And this has been confirmed in many species of
both. I'd never heard that second part.
Amphibians and mammals, yes.
So when you're in left hemispheric mode, you're more in predator mode, and when you're in right hemispheric mode, you're more in prey mode.
We are not lizards or toads or marmosets or whatever, but in animals, generally speaking, this is the case. Getting and grasping, and after all, our left hemisphere is the one that controls the grasping hand, is left hemisphere, and exploring, which you mentioned, is more right hemisphere. And when a frontal function is deficient, people often go into automatic mode of the hand of that side. And the left hand, it's usually exploratory motions, meaningless ones, but trying to explore the environment. And with the right hand, it's grasping pointlessly at things. So they, as it were, their automatic thing is with the left hand, the right hemisphere to explore, with the right hand, the left hemisphere to grasp. So when you said exploratory, and you said defensive, and you said also opening up to possibilities, these are all aspects of the way the right hemisphere, I often say the right hemisphere opens up to possibility, whereas the left hemisphere wants to close down to a certainty.
Right.
And you need
both of these. Chaos and order issue.
Chaos and order.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I loved in your talk, you talked about... a chaos and order, but...
Okay. Chaos and order. Yin and the yang. The Tao. The way. And the way is where they two meet. The two meet over time in the center. And life happens. It's amazing how... this is tying into everything that we've learned so far, and we can assimilate this new knowledge and adapt it and soak it up like a sponge. And I'm happy that you, my listener, my dear listener, are here with me to enjoy this. I want you to enjoy this with me because something special is happening on this podcast. We are learning. We're sharing knowledge. I am learning. And people who have knowledge of the situation question, why are we doing this? What is the point? Right? Well, this is the point. This experience that we're having right now, this learning experience together, this is why I'm doing it. It really is. And you could say, well, why do you need to record this? What's the point of recording it? Well, it's my record. Why do I need to publish it? Well, you know what? If I don't publish it, where am I going to store this stuff? And where am I going to get my feedback from and my encouragement? Right? Why do I need encouragement and feedback? Well, you know, it is, I'm not completely unhuman. I do want some kind of positive feedback on what I'm doing. And, you know, what's the point of it all? Well, the point is that we're learning, and as we learn, we're growing. And this podcast will be improving, and eventually it will solidify in season 3 into a set of, let's call them the canon of the Stream of Random, like episodes that have an order and understanding. Maybe the canon will come in season 4 after we have edited and put things together, then we're going to reiterate the most important concepts that we found. And, but I think those can, anyway, we'll see. We'll see what we do. Let me go put my stream of random podcast link on this whiteboard that they have here. I should make that my profile, the picture for today's episode. Let's see if they have any chalk left. Or maybe they took the chalk away. Let's see.
But if I may say so, you seemed, and maybe you'd like to gloss that a little, you seem to suggest that it would be good, we can't get rid of chaos, but you seem to imply that it would be better if we could. Whereas my view is that chaos and order are necessary to one another, and there is a proper sort of harmony or balance.
Well, okay. I think that's as deep a question as you could possibly ask, I would say,
good.
In some sense. I mean, some of the... I would say there's a central theological issue there, and
yes.
The issue there is that, you know, in Genesis, the proper environment of humanity is construed as a garden.
Yes.
And so I see that as the optimal balance of chaos and order, because
right.
Nature is flourishes and is
yes.
prolific and is chaotic.
Yes.
And then if you add harmony to that, you
yes.
have a garden.
Yes.
So you live in the garden, you're supposed to tend the garden. Okay, so now the garden is created. It's a walled space because
yes.
Eden is a walled space. It's
yes.
a paradisa. It's a walled garden.
That's it.
Now, the thing is, as soon as you make a wall, you try to keep what's outside out, but you can't because the boundaries between things are permeable. So if you're going to have reality and you're going to have a bounded space, you're going to have a snake in the garden.
Yes.
Now, then the question is, what the hell should you do about that? Should
yes.
you make the walls so high that no snake can possibly
yes.
get in? Or should you allow for the possibility of snakes, but make yourself strong enough so that you can contend with them?
Yes.
And I think there's an answer there that goes deep to the question of even maybe why, theological question of why God allowed evil to exist in the world.
I agree with you.
It's like, well, do you make people safe or strong? And
yes.
strong is better. And safe might not be commensurate with being. Like, it might not be possible to exist and to be safe.
Wow, he talks about being safe versus strong. Well, obviously, Peterson has a certain position and is a well-known rabble-rouser. So he's going to be for the strong versus safe. But I'm thinking about these walled gardens approach to Facebook and all that. And our co-host, Harry Reid, he sent us a picture where he was posting something on Facebook and got censored. Something about fast food. And I was thinking, wow, so big corporations have finally found a way to censor people complaining about them. And they're like, oh, that's false information. And it's really the establishment now is going to take over the censorship. And eventually they're going to say, oh, they've already started to say, if you actually like on Twitter, if you like something that has been questioned, they're going to say, oh, did you know that liking false information is bad? Or something like that, like scaring the slaves. And eventually all of this is going to go against your social score. And, you know, then when they... run out of soup bones and they need some new candidates to sacrifice for feeding the people, you know, you might be next. And I'm not saying they're literally going to eat people, but they're going to, you know, just take away all of your livelihood. I mean, just think about what's happening to now the non-essentials. It's like they're being sacrificed on the altar. Right? It's like, well, you're not essential and we're just going to bankrupt you. I mean, so many people are suffering actually right now. who don't have essential jobs, who are out of work. And they were saying today on No Agenda Show about food banks being empty. Humanitarian crisis, so wow. I actually have to listen to the rest of the show.
Safe.
Well, so, our existence is predicated on the fact that we die, so it's never safe.
Well, it's certainly bounded, right?
Yes.
It's inevitably wrapped up with that sort of finitude.
Yes.
So there's a lovely, lovely Jewish idea, an ancient idea.
Yes.
It's one of the most profound ideas I've ever come across. Yeah. And so it's a kind of a Zen koan, and here it is that... So it's a question about the classic attributes of God, omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent.
Mm.
What does a being with those three attributes lack?
Mm.
I think, well, what kind of question is that? And the answer is limitation.
Yeah.
And the second answer is that's the justification for being,
yeah.
is that the unlimited lacks the limited.
Exactly.
And so the limited is us.
For anything to come into existence, there needs to be an element of resistance. And so things are never predicated on one pole of what is always a dipole.
Right.
Everything has that dipole.
Yeah, it's like a prerequisite for being.
It is, and it's imaged in the yin-yang idea. But it seems to me very important, because in our culture we often seem to suppose that certain things are just good and other things are just bad.
Well, there you go. He talks about the yin and the yang. And I think this is a great point to stop clipping for now, even though this conversation is incredibly interesting. And this is gonna go on forever. I just got my hands full. So warning, do not reach for your stop button. I'm gonna go into a monologue soon. All right, welcome to the second or third segment, third part of the show. This is where I went to to Dunkin' Donuts, and I got a bag of bagels and a fresh coffee, and my hands are full now. And I'm walking back to the house to bring my family some fresh bagels, and I can't operate the clip machine with two hands full, one hand with a hot cup of coffee, and the other hand with a big bag of bagels. I got 12 bagels, half of them everything, half of them sesame. And then I got a sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich, also from my wifey. I love her so much. And I just ate one myself. Now I'm sure she'll split it up into 15 pieces and give everyone a little slice. You know, like 12 people sharing the 12 people sharing the chicken leg. So, yeah, this is a really great interview. And I guess I'm going to have to listen to a lot more Jorgen Peterson. Or Jorgen Peterson, because he already covered this guy, and it looks like I'm just missing out on things. Well, we definitely have a lot to catch up on, and this is part of our education here, our edumacation, lifelong learning, and also about sharing, because if you can't share what you're learning, you don't learn it as well. It's also like about processing what we're listening to, talking about it. It's going to make it much easier for me to remember it. It's like, oh yeah, I talked about that on podcast 158. And we're going to call this the right and left brain bagel. The Tao of the bagel. That's what we're going to call this episode, the Tao of the bagel. How the right and the left brain interact an interview with a review of the interview between Jorgen Peterson and Ian McGilchrist. I got the name right? Yeah. Man, my ear's itching. Life is happening. Life is happening. Well, Duncan said that they're going to be open. The lobby will be open on Monday again due to staff shortages. I guess people are on vacation, huh? Now, wouldn't it be great? Now we're going to switch topics, because this is the stream of random, and we're allowed to switch topics anytime we want, because this is my show. So don't be hitting the pause button or stop button. Well, this dog's got one of those electric fence collars, I bet. It won't come up all the way to me. It's just running around in the yard with its electric collar. I bet that wouldn't stop a chihuahua. They'd be like, screw that. Inhibition. It's about the inhibitions. So, let's go over some of these ideas. So I saw a bolt on the ground, and I'm like, damn, bolt, look at that hardware. I just sorted buckets and buckets of that. And then I'm like, damn, all that hardware that I have up in the bunker, I bet I could build something with that. And then I'm like, damn, what are all the recipes that we could build with those things? I'm like, damn, what if we had an app that would help us, do that? Like, you take pictures of all these different equipment that you have, and it'll come up with, like, things that you could build with it. So that's, like, the right brain. The left brain is, like, looking at all this stuff, and the right brain is like, well, you know, you could build this and this and this and this and this and this and this with it. It's like the infinite possibilities. It's just generating unbounded sets. And the left brain is like, oh, we need to bound this. We need to bind it. We need to bring it inside of the orientation, inside of the perspective, the triangle, the eye of the triangle. So if you have the all-seeing eye at the top of the pyramid, it's looking down, let's say. And the first few layers of that all-seeing eye would be the top of the pyramid, which would be your perspective or your orientation. That's where the eye is looking. And then the base of the pyramid, the wide part, that would be like the expanding infinite possibilities, expanding outwards, all away from each other. You know, the pyramid could be humongous, right? So that's kind of like the pyramid thing. And I guess we could put the angle of the pyramid at 33, call it the magic number, make it mystical, spooky, for no reason, except, hey, while we're at this, let's throw in some spice. So the introspect, to look inside, is really the encroachment of the mind, of the analytical mind, upon the governing mind. So it's a step towards taking a piece away or expanding the territory down into the pyramid. Maybe. And the pushback is going to be like the infinite sets. Like, the resistance that you're going to encounter mostly is just the huge swamp of data that you're going to be confronted with. And unless you have a perspective, a limitation, you're not going to be able to even iterate over that. Because the computer, or the mind, only has one instruction pointer. That's what the professor from MIT was saying, Patrick Winston. You only have one symbolic processing unit. And if that symbolic processing unit is busy over here, right, it can't be busy over there. It's only busy with one thing at a time. It's like the global interpreter lock. And that could be our logical, symbolic mind. Our left brain, the eye of the pyramid, let's say, looking at those letters. Yeah. Well, we've had a long journey. We've had a long journey on this podcast. It's been millions of steps that we've done together. 158 episodes. We've overtaken the Hog Story in terms of episodes. We're not going to catch up with, eventually we're going to catch up even with Tom Woods, who's at 1,000-some episodes, because he is not producing on the weekend. I am. And if I do 2 episodes a day, like some people, like no one's ever going to listen to that. Steve Bannon in his war room, pandemic war room, I don't even listen to that. He just goes on and on and on. He has 2 episodes a day. Some people have 3 episodes a day, but they don't do it every day. So, you know what? I'm going to put this on pause, and I'm going to actually get some new input, because maybe Tim Poole has dropped some new knowledge on us, or maybe there's something happening. Life is happening. It's the Friday after Thanksgiving. It's the Black Friday. Let's hope that the AWS is working again today. I'm going to be working today myself. I hope it's going to be a slow day where I get to work on some stuff in peace without being disturbed by other people's problems. All right, let's put this on pause and let's see what's happening in the world. Let's get a scoop. So I'm just catching up on the No Agenda show. It's pretty hilarious. They have John Kerry saying that climate change will kill more people than Corona because it will cause more pandemics. So that's pretty hilarious. And the No Agenda Build Back Better jingle is really great. I have to clip that. So much to do. They have great material, and it's a great listen, unlike this show. But we're not giving up yet. We're like foot fungus here. It doesn't go away that easy, you know what I'm saying? Okay, people, that's it for today. I hope you enjoy this show as much as I enjoyed producing it. And, of course, remember, these are just the raw clips. Eventually, we're going to, you know, create something great. And now I found this pumpkin on the street that people threw away. I gave it to my chickens, and they're so happy. Oh, my God. So happy Thanksgiving again, and have a great holidays. Bye. Okay. Actually, I have one more thought. You know, I was discussing with some of my biggest fans on this podcast, family members. You know who you are. They were saying, oh, you should make a Facebook group and promote your podcast. So if you guys want to create Facebook groups or promote the podcast yourselves, I will welcome it. But what I would like is, first, you should help me produce the episodes. So if you want to help out in any way with this show, why don't you take an episode that you like and clean it up? Either send it to an audio engineer and have them clean it up and produce it, or do it yourself. Grab a copy of Audacity, and there's some different tutorials on podcast editing, and clean up the show and send it to me. I'll put it in season 3 when it reaches our strict criteria for that, or we'll make a new season for that. We'll make season 1.5 or 1.1 for guest edited shows or something. But you know, the point is that if you want to help out, promote this show, we need to get the audio cleaned up. We need to get the production done, and I don't have the time to do it. Like, I'm gonna have to go to work now, and I don't have time for this. So if you want to help out, you know, you're welcome to take these shows and post them on YouTube. Why doesn't someone post it on YouTube? Because I got banned. You know, share it on different media, make clips, share it on TikTok and Instagram. You know, there's lots of things you can do if you really want to help, or hire someone to do it. Go to Fiverr.com and hire someone for $5 to do it. I'm sure they would love it. They would love to help out. So, yeah, that's it. Step by step, kids. Where's the stop button?